the most important meal of the day, second breakfast. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another Second Breakfast podcast. I'm Andy Roth alongside Phil Duvall. Say hi, Phil.
Hello, everybody. It's Wednesday.
It is.
I don't really call it Wednesday anymore.
You call it Mel's Day?
Mel's Day, for now. For now. I know it's a little too early to have nostalgia, but I really, and I know we still really have like 2.5 months.
We do.
But I just feel like we're coming up on the end of Project Melway, and I'm getting a little glint in my eye about the whole thing.
It's true. It's not May of your senior year of high school, but it's the end of January. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, and you're starting to look around going, well, that was the last time we were ever going to do this together.
Yes.
So, you know, I think we're getting close to that point. It just feels that way.
Yeah.
I mean, we are almost in late period Mel here. We really are.
That's true. For those who may be joining us late, it macro level, not they just turned on this particular podcast.
If you just turned on the particular podcast, you can rewind it.
You're right. Just click left.
It's easy. So much easier than when we were kids.
Right? Oh, God. Cassette tapes? Come on, man.
My mom had this such an awesome tape player in her car where you could actually fast forward and it would go to the next song. And like,
right. Yes, I know of them.
I was like, how does it know?
I got to be honest, Phil. I still don't know how it knows. Mm-hmm. I just don't. I know how CD knows. I don't know how a tape knows.
No.
So, for those joining us late to the Project Melway experience, the Alan Parsons project, the Mel Gibson project.
You're a mess.
I am. I'm all messed up. Why don't you tell?
Sit down for a little bit. Let me help the people out.
Oh,
here. So there's a shadowy organization known as the Gibsonian Institute, and the Gibsonian Institute exists for the primary purpose either of preserving and enlightening the world on the works of Mel Gibson or ruining him. I'm not sure which. Right. I still haven't figured it out. Mm. But the Gibsonian Institute has assigned Andy and me this project. It's called Project Melway, in which we watch every single Mel Gibson movie in chronological order.
Well grammar, by the way. Well,
thank you. Yes. You know, we have a friend to the podcast whose name is Allison. We talk about her quite often. Mm. There are people in your life, and maybe you know what I'm talking about, that
not
the
yet.
The impact – no, I don't. I know what you're talking about. Don't even finish that sentence. I don't know what you're talking about. There are people in our lives whose impact on us and influence on us is actually greater than the amount of time we ever spent with them.
Yes, absolutely.
And Allison is one of these people partially because she was one of the few people I knew who would just openly correct my grammar.
Awesome.
And do it in a way that didn't make me hate her. I think probably because she intimidated me. That's my guess. I found her so intimidating.
I would hate you, but you would smell the hate on me and you would somehow injure me.
I mostly hung out with people that intimidated me. That was sort of – and then just acted like I wasn't intimidated. That was sort of my MO. Still kind of is, actually. Hmm. Still kind of is. So anyways.
I applaud that, by the way. I think that's fantastic. I think that's a fantastic way to be.
Act as if is sort of my thing. But
both
I
halves
want,
of that. Hang out with people who intimidate you and act as if you are not intimidated.
This is how we roll. There was a point where there's a band called the Traveling Wilburys. This is a digression off my digression, but I'm fine. There was a band called the Traveling Wilburys, which was, listen to this, George Harrison, Tom Petty, Roy Orbison, Bob Dylan, and Jeff Lynne.
Yes.
They had one album and then Roy Orbison died, and then they did another album and that was sort of it. But they basically, it was George Harrison and Roy Orbison sitting around playing together, and they were like, who else could we get? And they just like called a couple people up and then everybody just showed up and they made an album. They made a song and then they made an album. But when they started to do it, George Harrison, who basically and everyone kind of knew, he idolized Bob Dylan. Even though they were roughly the same age, had played together before, had known each other for years, he idolized Bob Dylan. But when they got together, George Harrison was like, let's be clear about this. We're in a band now. Like, you're not Bob Dylan in this band. You're just another bandmate. And Bob Dylan was like, got it. Okay. So that's sort of how I feel like I have all these friends that I look up to, but when I'm around them, I'm like, okay, we're all on the same level here, people. And they're like, yeah, of course we are. And then I'm like, oh my God, they bought it. Okay, good.
We're in a band.
Right. Okay. Right, right, exactly. Right. So, so Allison would correct my grammar. So I work really, like, so there are times when, so for instance, the I, me thing, but also I try never to dangle a participle. Dangling participles are something I work very, at which I work very hard. See? Just like that. At which I work very hard.
I will admit that I am extremely proper in my written in my written language. I'm much more lax. I try not to get, you know, the I and me agreement mixed up. But if I'm going to end a sentence or a clause with a preposition, it's just going to happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. I hear you. And that makes sense. And I know for all my, like, I'm trying, I'm sure she's listening going, you're so terrible at grammar, Phil. You have no idea. But nice try, buddy. Mm. She'll appreciate that. The only time I'm really snippy about grammar is when people, if someone gets snippy or corrective about anything or like snarky on social media, like Facebook in their comments, and they'll put some like whatever withering thing, but they'll put your the wrong way. I'll just do a little asterisk your. That's my only response to the whole thing, like spelled like this. Just like, and I won't respond to any of their arguments. I'll just be like, your grammar is terrible. I was playing a game with a friend of mine, and he was beating me, and he was trash talking me, and he was wearing a bright orange jacket and a red hat, and he was like, he was just hammering me and trash talking me in front of all of our friends, and I just go, your hat doesn't match your jacket. That was the end. That was my whole argument. Like, you might be beating me, but your taste is questionable.
Defriended.
Right, exactly. So
to sum up,
this is Melway.
We're
Project
watching
Melway.
All of Mel Gibson's movies in chronological order.
This is all, listen, it's all relevant, people. Listen.
Hey, yeah.
I want you, if you've listened so far, go back and re-listen to this part. It is coded with all sorts of subliminal aspects about the movie we're going to talk about today.
Totally. Totes.
Chicken Run, everyone.
Chicken Run.
The movie is called Chicken Run. It is Mel Gibson's second film of the year 2000 out of three movies in the year 2000. Mm-hmm. In the year 2000. Yep. And yes. And it is, dare I say, the best movie of his from the year 2000.
Yes. Go ahead and dare. I think it's pretty clearly his best.
For those of you who don't know about Chicken Run, Chicken Run is an animated film from Aardman Animation. Yes. And a guy by the name of Nick Park, who's created, you either know this stuff or if you know what we're talking about, you love it. And if you don't, look it up. It's all on Netflix streaming.
Yeah.
He created a cartoon, the cartoon characters, it's in its claymation. It's not CGI, it's not painted. It's claymation done beautifully. And he has these characters named Wallace and Gromit.
He does.
And Wallace is this British bachelor, and Gromit is his dog, and Wallace and Gromit are inventors. And as goes in cartoon land, Wallace is an idiot. Not an idiot, but a buffoon.
Indeed.
It's not too different from the relationship between Garfield and what's Garfield's owner's name?
John Arbuckle.
John. Except he's not as big of a loser as John. I mean, John is just the most depressing character in the history of...
As Garfield without Garfield.
Look that up. If you don't know what Garfield without Garfield is, look that up. But anyways, Wallace and Gromit, he's done... I know he did at least three short films that were like about a half hour long or an hour. He won Oscars for all three of them. It's brilliant stuff.
And it's different. I know that everyone sitting here listening to it, I've seen claymation before, and it doesn't look appreciably different from other claymation things, except in the way that a Miyazaki anime from Japan looks different from a Disney movie. Like they're both animated movies, but they have a style, and Aardman Animation has a style, and it is playful. It is inventive. It is very expressive. Character-wise,
It's very expressive. It doesn't feel realistic at all.
Right. Right. Yes, that's true.
But not surrealistic either. It just feels very animated. They're not trying, you know, there's so much, especially with CGI, there's so much hyper-realism going on in animation. They're trying to make it look as real as possible.
Mm-hmm.
What I appreciated about Wreck-It Ralph and in the computer animation realm, what I appreciate about, is the same thing I appreciate about Aardman Animation, is it doesn't pretend it's anything but a cartoon.
Yep.
And it's really blast. So Chicken Run is about, it's set in a chicken coop. And it's these, and it's based on this group of chickens that are trying constantly to escape from the chicken coop. And there's an old lady farmer or woman who runs the place, and her husband, I think it's her husband, who oversees, and he's always stopping them from escaping.
Yes.
And with his two terrifying
dogs.
Right. Oh my gosh. I started watching this with my daughter, who's two, and then I was like, this might have not been a good idea. And then she went to bed, and by the time she went to bed, the ending, I was like, oh, I'm so glad she didn't see this. So then I deleted it, and then she woke up the next morning and she was like, I watched Chicken Run. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry, honey. It's gone. It's all gone. That was a week ago. This morning she woke up and she was like, I watched Chicken Run. And I was like, oh, see, she's already forgotten about Pocahontas. Thank God.
On every possible episode.
I wish I could have done that. Forgotten all about it. Right. But Chicken Run, she has not. She really loved it. And she's been watching I've been having her watch the Wallace and Gromit stuff on Netflix. She loves it.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So into the mix, they're trying to figure out how to escape. And it's very much set up. Imagine the chickens talk. The chickens wear scarves, which I don't quite understand, but whatevs.
Chickens have
teeth. They all have teeth. They're all like sort of British people, but they happen to be chickens.
Indeed.
And they're trying to escape because once they're not good at laying eggs anymore, they get killed and eaten. And so they're trying to escape, and it's basically a World War II prison escape drama.
Yes, and this is a genre. I mean, it's a subgenre, but this is a
phenomenal genre.
It's amazing. And
you notice the number of their coop?
Yes, I did.
The number of their coop is 17.
Yes.
Based on the phenomenal Billy Wilder Prisoners of War film called Stalag 17, which, to be, if I'm being completely honest, Andy, I've only seen once, and I can't even remember anything about it other than that I saw it and went, that was amazing.
It, for a very, very long time, William Holden's performance in that movie was my favorite performance of any film ever.
I love everything you just said. All the words that you used were all good words. So into this mix, where's Mel Gibson in all this, you ask? Well, let me tell you about MG. Into this mix of these these chickens trying to escape comes this rooster. He is a circus rooster who has escaped from the circus. And he crash lands. He's flying, and he crash lands into their coop.
Mm-hmm.
And the rooster is this, ready for it, cocky, huh?
I don't get it.
American.
Oh, no, I got it. I got
there
it.
There you go. Okay. I knew you'd get it. I knew you'd get it. Cocky American rooster with an Evel Knievel outfit who basically is like, hey, what's up, everybody? Hey, hoo-ah. And that's Mel Gibson.
Yes.
I have something to say about that in a little bit, but let me finish up. And then he basically tells them that they can find – he's going to help them escape. He's going to teach them all to fly.
Right.
During this time, the farmers decide they're going to stop being chicken farmers, and they're actually going to make chicken pot pies. So they buy this machine that turns all of the chickens –
Egg farmers.
Egg farmers. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
And start basically killing chickens and eating them.
Yes.
This movie is a vegan's delight. Let's be honest.
It's true.
Because the people who eat meat are legitimate murderers in this film.
That's true.
Not like me. I eat meat, but I'm not a murderer. I'm a loving person.
Right.
But the people in the movie.
Right. My hamburgers just come off the beef tree, so it's fine.
Yeah, everything's good.
It's fine.
This stuff doesn't grow on trees. It doesn't? So that's the basic plot of Chicken Run. It is a prison escape film set in a chicken coop, and it's English, and it's got an American in it, kind of. And it's great. It's a blast. Everything that Nick Park does is good, and this is no exception.
I agree. I almost, we were talking about this before we started recording. We don't have a lot to say about this movie just because it's just awesome at what it does,
I have a couple things I'd like to talk about, but sure. It's not like, oh my gosh, like last week with Million Dollar Hotel, it was like, what are we doing with our lives?
Right, but I think it's more than that. I think it's more than that. I think, you know, not that MG isn't wonderful in this movie, but the cocksure charismatic leader. I mean, yeah, see what I did there? He can do that in his sleep, right? He's great. Yeah. I'm not, that is to take can nothing say, away from his performance.
Can I say something about it?
Go for it.
His best American accent to date.
Agreed.
Like, I was noticeably, I was like,
yes.
Not a, just a, it was almost like because he was being a voice actor and he didn't have to focus on anything else.
His
accent was impeccable.
Agreed.
Impeccable.
No.
Boom.
No.
Cocky, cocksure, impeccable.
So let's talk real quick about the World War II POW camp subgenre. For those who have not seen any of them, you should start because they're amazing.
Who you need to start with, right?
Stalag 17.
And The Great Escape.
The Great Escape, yes.
I mean,
yes.
And those are the two movies that it, I mean, when one of the, there's one chicken that's known for trying to escape over and over again.
Yes.
And when we first see her, she's bouncing a ball in her chicken coop, which yes. is like a takeoff of Steve McQueen's character in The Great Escape.
Yes, there's so much stuff. There's even this is not a POW movie, but one of my favorite movies of all time, a prison movie, Cool Hand Luke. When she gets caught, and this is not just in Cool Hand Luke. It is in The Great Escape. It is in a bunch of these as well. There is a thing called the box, and you go into the box and. And for this chicken coop, it's the coal bin. And every time, the way sort of like the shot, if you will, is it might actually also be the same as in The Great Escape, but it's definitely the same as in Cool Hand Luke. I mean, there are only so many ways you can film somebody coming in and out of a box, I suppose.
Right,
but,
right.
But yeah, The Great Escape, Cool Hand Luke, Stalag 17, there are so many lovely callbacks to those movies, if you know them, and if you don't, it takes away nothing from the movie.
And I would actually say, if we're talking about prison escape films in that subgenre, I would say start with Great Escape and Stalag 17. But on the other hand, start with Chicken Run, and if you like it,
that's right.
I mean, it does the best. It's the best. It's not a satire, but it's the best. Way to reference a genre that you appreciate is by actually following the tropes of the genre. Shaun of the Dead.
Shaun of the Dead and Galaxy Quest are the two movies
come
to mind.
Right.
Yes.
You watch Shaun of the Dead or Galaxy Quest, you're seeing movies that are basically riffing on these genres,
yes.
and yet they riff on them by following the rules of the genre.
Right.
And Chicken Run does that, and it does it so well. If you liked it, you'll like prison escape genres. I mean, you'll like
because,
that genre.
That's true. Let's talk about the voice acting, because something I liked about it was that except for two or three people, they're not super well-known actors. You've got Mel Gibson. You've got Mrs. Tweedy, who is just deliciously evil, and she is voiced by Miranda Richardson. And the rat is voiced by... But the smarter of the two rats is voiced by Timothy Spall, which is funny because he is the guy in the Harry Potter movies who transforms into the rat. And I just realized that as I was speaking. But other than that, it's kind of...
Yeah.
So what they've done is they have gotten, and I'm not going to say that, you know, famous actors can't also be amazing voice actors. I mean, the Toy Story movies are great and you know everyone in those movies. But you
use that as an example. But frankly, Pixar is really good at mixing in a lot of voices.
That's true.
Of people who aren't famous at all with the voices that are famous. And so it's like, I mean, I talk about a movie all the time, but Wreck-It Ralph, like there's some great voice work in Wreck-It Ralph. And then you're like, I looked it up and it's like, oh, that was the director. Like Zangief is the director.
Yeah.
And as is the Sour Ball. Who works for the king? Or if you're tired of us talking about Wreck-It Ralph, in The Incredibles, one of the most famous characters in The Incredibles is that the inventor of the costumes.
Yeah,
the little diminutive is a great word. Diminutive creator of the costumes, and she's voiced by one of the just some Pixar person.
The male director.
That's right. I mean, stuff like that. And you'll see that any Pixar movie, but a lot of Pixar movies, when you look at some of the most memorable voices in the movies, you'll be like, oh, that's not actually a famous person at all.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So anyways. So I was thinking about Monsters, Inc. and the woman who's Mike Wazowski. I'm Wazowski. So surprised.
I love that woman.
You're late again.
Roz, did you do something? Has anyone talked? One other person that I want to mention, just because I want to talk about this other movie that is not a great movie, but she is ridiculous in it. The fat chicken, the really, really fat chicken, is voiced by an actress named Jane Horrocks.
Okay.
And she is in a movie called Little Voice. And
I've heard of that movie.
This is a movie that is entirely based around this one person, Jane Horrocks' ability to sound like anyone. She sounds like Judy Garland when she sings. She sounds like Judy Garland. She sounds like Shirley Bassey. She sounds like Marilyn Monroe. Like just a litany of people that she sounds perfectly like. You close your eyes and you are listening to the original person. It's unbelievable. It is worth it. Stop watching once she's done with her concert, because the rest of it is kind of dumb. It takes place like the climax of the movie takes place like 2/3 of the way through, because they don't realize that her concert is the best thing about the movie. But
so it's like a J.R.R. Tolkien book.
Well played.
Thank you.
Well played.
Thank you.
I'm going to answer that after I walk for another 7 hours.
Do you remember when you were reading Lord of the Rings the first time and you were like, they destroyed the ring. It's all... Wait, why is there 150 pages left?
150 pages. And, for all of those people who are like, Return of the King had too many endings, first off, shut up. Second...
Right, first of all, shut up.
There is an entire, like, extra plot complete with rising action, climax, and falling action that Jackson cut out of the end of the book.
Right, you people have no idea what you would have been in for had you read the book.
Oh, man, we're still watching it. Return of the King just opened, and we're still watching it. That first showing. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Wait, is there a new Hobbit coming out this year, or is it next year?
Yep.
Is this year?
Yep.
Oh, better it's, be better
it's
than
the same,
one.
It's the same release schedule. It was going to be December, June, or July, but they changed the third one to December.
Well, that's right, because there's three of them for a 100-page book. Okay, anyways, let's change the subject back to Chicken Run. What else did you have to say about it, Andy?
A bunch of little things. Two lines that I just loved. The wit is razor sharp in this movie, and maybe my favorite line is because the main female character is fairly uptight. In certain ways, you're the first chick I ever met with a shell still on. Amazing.
Nice.
Amazing. That's you can't. I mean, you can because someone got paid for that line, but you can't buy lines like that.
Right.
I'm going to start calling people the old army rooster, the old guy who's in the barracks. I'm going to start calling people you old sausage, because because he calls people that and it's amazing. There is the smart chicken. Has just a wonderfully incomprehensible Scottish accent to the point it's almost like Benicio del Toro in
I was gonna
Suspect.
Say that, yes.
Because
you're like, wait, what was that?
Right.
Like, what did you say?
I swear she's not using real words. It's just so good. And
I want to go to Scotland so bad and just like
right.
It's like learning a foreign language, just like learning Spanish. I want to learn Scottish.
That's right. And there is a moment where they're in a vehicle, and the Scottish, and someone is hanging on to the end of the vehicle, and the Scottish chicken goes, "A Klingon, Captain, the engines can't take it." And I was like, "Yep, I can die now. That's well done."
That happened. one of the things I really loved about this movie was you mentioned the old rooster. He's like the only male on the whole land. You know, he's this old rooster, which.
Yep.
I think ostensibly means that he's been with all of them. I'm not sure. It's kind of creepy. But anyways, he was like apparently a war veteran, and he acts like an old soldier.
Yep.
But this movie, I mean, depending on how defensive you are about America, it's pretty funny because, I mean, it's a really incisive sort of – you get the sense of what the Brits really think about Americans.
It's true. When we leave the party – now we know what they
this
talk about.
Movie is yes. a great like really Mel Gibson, you know, explodes onto the scene literally, but he's a little bit too good to be true, and he's a little bit flashy, and it gets everyone excited.
Yep.
And he gives them hope, but he doesn't necessarily have a lot to back it up with.
That's right.
And the old rooster just never buys it for a second.
Right. Right.
And so you really get some, there's some really good, if you choose to look for the cultural critique, it's there.
Yes.
Should you choose to accept it, as they say.
Yep.
Actually, if you don't choose to accept it, it's still there. And and it was, you know, it's one of those things where I'm like, I'm a little uncomfortable.
Sure.
But that's okay. It's really good. And I thought that was kind of great. I love watching their interaction. And there's a point I won't ruin the line, but there's a great line because the rooster talks about when he flew in the war all the time.
Yes.
And then like there's a sort of payoff for that I won't tell you about until you've seen the movie. It's great.
Indeed. The action sequences in this movie are truly thrilling in the way that Pixar action sequences are truly thrilling.
Yeah.
I mean, Pixar, I would say, is probably a little more action heavy throughout the end action set piece of Chicken Run. It goes on forever.
It does. The movie's like amazing. 90 minutes long. The movie's 90 minutes long, and it's like the last 15 to 20 minutes of this.
Yes, and it's thrilling throughout.
But it feels like a Rube Goldberg machine. It feels like there's this like mousetrap. Like there's this inevitability that once it starts, like it just, it's unstoppable. It is it just revs up, and then it just goes.
Yeah. Yes.
Love it.
Something, I don't know if you noticed this. Did you watch it on DVD or DVR, or what'd you do?
DVR.
Okay. I have something to tell you. It was amazing. No, it's all good.
I'm just I'm already jealous.
On the DVD, you've heard, Phil and folks out there in Second Breakfast Nation, you've heard of the boss button or the panic button. You know, you click on it and it goes back to like a spreadsheet or something, or it instantly takes you out of whatever you were doing. On the DVD menu, one of the choices you can move to is panic button. And I was like, I gotta see what this is.
Yeah, clearly.
Right? This was a heavily utilized clip when they made the trailers for this movie. But there's like a keep it together, keep calm, and it's all of the chickens standing there and like,
right.
And then of course like their chicken brain kicks in. They remember their chickens. It's like, blah! And all their wings, arms go up in the air.
It's like that scene in Airplane when everybody goes insane for like 30 seconds. Right.
The panic button, when you click on it, is like those 2.5 seconds. And then it goes right back to the menu. It's amazing. Brilliant.
That's great.
So good.
That's fantastic.
See,
there are things that you can do. There are DVD extras that make sense.
Yes.
I ever tell you what? There's a special audio track on Wet Hot American Summer.
No, what is it?
With extra farts.
No.
Yeah, and the entire movie, there's just people farting in the background.
Awesome.
For the whole movie. Just. I mean, it's classy, people.
Yeah.
Because I'm nothing if not highbrow.
Yeah, classy with a capital K.
So I was hanging out with Noel Coward the other day, and we said, I'm going to watch the scene with more farts. Anyways,
nice.
Sorry.
So anything else to say about Chicken Run? See it, guys. It's
a blast. It's a great voice performance. It makes up for MG's voice performance in Pocahontas.
Yes.
American accent makes up for his American accent when he first kind of came over.
Mm-hmm.
He's really got it down now.
Yep.
And it's just delightful.
Took him long enough.
I know. It's delightful, though. It's a delightful movie. It's fun. It really is. I think the thing about animation like this is that it doesn't take away from the story. You're watching and you're just enjoying the story. Mm-hmm. But then every once in a while, like you're like meta brain or so, or macro or whatever, will like step outside of what you're watching and be like, how'd they do that? That was awesome.
Yeah. Totally.
And then you just jump right back into it. It's not distracting.
Right.
But it's very similar to when you watch movies that have practical stunts instead of computer animated effects.
Yeah.
Where you're like, how did they do that?
How did that happen? Yes.
Right. And it is that special. And Nick Park's movies are that special. Aardman Animation is a very, very wondrous thing. I don't know what's next for them. They made a movie called Pirates last year, which I saw part of. I haven't been able to watch the whole thing, but which sounds like a, not a good endorsement for it, but it's just life is weird sometimes.
Life is weird sometimes.
But I really thoroughly enjoy everything that they do.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
Anyways, so yeah, MG, what's up next, man?
Next 3 weeks, The Patriot.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. What Women Want.
Okay.
We Were Soldiers.
I'm not going to lie. I'm looking forward to the next 3 weeks.
Sure. I've never seen We Were Soldiers, actually.
I saw it just a couple years ago for the for completists who already know you said that. I only saw it recently for the first time, like in the past 3 or 4 years,
okay.
And was mightily impressed with it.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to
very,
it.
Very impressive war film, and I'm looking forward to watching it again for sure, unquestionably.
Fantastic.
What Women Want? Have you seen What Women Want?
I have.
Not a bad film at all.
No.
I mean, it is what it is.
I had some fairly strong feelings about some parts of the plot. I wonder if I will feel the same, because I haven't seen it since. I saw it right when it came out on video.
Yeah, I mean, it's nonsense.
Well, right, but I mean, if you like romantic comedies, you're going to sit through a little nonsense.
Anytime you can read someone's mind, it implies the idea that, I guess we should wait on this for a couple weeks, but it implies the idea that you can, like, that people think in complete thoughts.
That's true.
I can barely speak in a complete thought. Can you imagine what it's like inside my brain? Like, seriously. Like, you all have heard me enough, right? Like, I'll go from bing, bing, bong, bong, boom all over the place. Can you imagine what kind of weird beehive is going on in my brain of, like, little synapses just going, zing, zing, zing,
you need
zing,
like
zing,
a-
zing, 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 zing.
Like a machete to get through the thick underbrush of your
ridiculousness.
Yes.
Right, right, exactly.
Yes.
So the idea that you could read someone's mind and they'd be like, I think I'd like a gummy bear right now.
You're right.
They could do What Women Want, but if they did What Men Want, it would have to be NC-17.
Oh, God, absolutely.
It would just be awful.
Yes.
The best person in the world. You'd be like, oh, no.
No, no, absolutely
not. That's not a thought.
Absolutely not. This doesn't really happen anymore because people don't talk like this after high school and college, but every time like girls would say to me, like, we'd just be talking like girls can always tell what guys are thinking. I was like, no, you can't, because you would never talk to us.
You would never.
They would never happen.
You would literally just be like, ugh.
All the time.
I want to say one thing about this. You know what? I'm going to save it. I have some thoughts about what you're saying.
I can't wait.
It'll
have to wait 2 weeks, but I can't.
It'll wait 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It has to do with my observations when I was teaching and watching the way high school girls interact with high school boys.
I am legitimately very excited for that conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. Things haven't changed much. I'll leave it at that.
Sure.
Things haven't changed much.
So there you go, guys. This is Chicken Run. Next week, The Patriot. And see Chicken Run. It's just great.
Yeah.
And that'll do it for today on Project Melway and Second Breakfast. I'm Andy Roth, and that's Phil DeVol. We'll see you again real soon. Bye-bye.
Ciao.
The most important meal of the day, Second Breakfast.